Chapter 58. It was evident that the betrayal of Mr. de Saulnier would be followed by new efforts on the part of the bishop to crush us. Mr. Brassard wrote me from Canada in December, "All the bishops are preparing to hurl the thunders against you and your people on account of your heroic resistance to the tyranny of the Bishop of Chicago. I have told them the truth, that they don't want to know it, but they don't want to know it. My Lord Bourget told me positively that you must be forced at any cost to yield to the authority of your bishop, and he has threatened to excommunicate me if I tell the people what I know of the shameful conduct of de Saulnier. If I were alone, I would not mind this excommunication and would speak the truth, but such a sentence against me would kill my poor old mother. I hope you will not find fault with me if I remain absolutely mute. I pray you to consider this letter confidential. You know very well the trouble you would put me into by its publication." The French Canadians of Chicago saw at once that their bishop, strengthened by the support of de Saulnier, would be more than ever determined to crush them. They thought that the best way to force him to do them justice was to publish a manifesto of their grievances against him and make a public appeal to all the bishops of the United States and even to the Pope. On the 22nd of January, 1857, the Chicago Tribune was requested by them to publish the following document. At a public meeting of the French and Canadian Catholics of Chicago, held in the hall of Mr. Beaurecaire, on the 22nd January 1857, Mr. Rofino being called to preside, and Mr. Franchard acting as a secretary, the following addresses and resolutions being read have been unanimously approved. Editors of the Tribune, will you allow 1,000 voices from the dead to speak to the public through your valuable paper? Everybody in Chicago knows that a few years ago there was a flourishing congregation of French people coming from France and Canada in this city. They had their priest, their church, their religious meeting. All that is now dispersed and destroyed. The present Bishop of Chicago has breathed his deadly breath upon us. Instead of coming to us as a father, he came as a savage enemy. Instead of helping us as a friend, he has put us down as a revengeful foe. He has done the very contrary to which was commanded him by the gospel. Instead of guiding us with the cross of the meek Jesus, he has ruled over us with an iron rod. Every Sunday, the warm-hearted and generous Irish go to his church to hear the voice of his priest in his English language. The intelligent German have their pastors to address them in their mother tongue. The French people are the only ones now who have no priest and no church. And it is from lack of zeal and liberality? And is it from lack of zeal and liberality? Ah, no. We take the whole city of Chicago as a witness that there was not in Chicago a better looking little church than the French Canadian church called St. Louis. But alas, we have been turned out of it by our very bishop. We owe to ourselves and to our children to rise from the tomb where Bishop O'Regan has buried us as a voice to tell the truth. As soon as Bishop O'Regan came to Chicago, he was told that the French priest was too popular, that his church was attended not only by his French Canadian people, but that many Irish and Germans were going daily to him for their religious duties. It was whispered in the ears of his Right Reverend that on account of this, many dollars and cents were going to the French priest, which would be better stored in his Right Reverend's purse. Till that time, the bishop was not, in appearance, taking much trouble about it, but as soon as he saw that there were dollars and cents at stake, we had the honor to occupy his thoughts day and night. There follows a detailed account of Bishop O'Regan's perfidious maneuverings that robbed the French congregation of both their French priest and their beautiful church and parsonage. The letter concludes with the following resolutions. Resolved, first, that the Right Reverend O'Regan, Bishop of Chicago, has entirely lost the confidence of the French and Canadian population of Chicago since he has taken away from us our church. Resolved, second, that the Right Reverend O'Regan has published a base slander against the French and Canadian population of Chicago when he said he took our church from our hands on the pretense that we could not pay for it. Resolved, third, that the Right Reverend O'Regan, having said to our deputies who went to inquire from him by what right he was taking our church from us to give to another congregation, "I have the right to do what I like with your church," said O'Regan, "and your church properties. I can sell them and put the money in my pocket and go where I please with it," has assumed a power too tyrannical to be obeyed by a Christian and a free people. Resolved, four, that the nature of the different suits which the Right Reverend O'Regan has had before the civil courts of this state, and which he has almost invariably lost, have proved to the whole people of Illinois that he is quite unworthy of the position he holds in the Catholic Church. Resolved, fifth, that the Right Reverend O'Regan is here publicly accused of being guilty of simony, of having extorted $100 from a priest to give him permission to officiate and administer the sacraments among us. Resolved, sixth, that the Right Reverend O'Regan is in forbidding the Irish and German Catholics to communicate with the French Catholic Church, and allowing the French and Canadian to communicate with the Irish and German churches, has acted with a view to deprive the French Church of religious fees and other donations, which acts we consider unjust and against the spirit of the Church, and more resembling a mercantile transaction than a Christian work. Resolved, seventh, that the French and Canadian people of Illinois have seen with feelings of grief and surprise that the Reverend Mr. Desaulniers has made himself the humble valet of the merciless and shameful persecutor of his countrymen. Resolved, eighth, that the Reverend Mr. Chinnicky, pastor of St. Anne, deserves the gratitude of every Catholic of Illinois for having put a stop to the rapacious tyranny of the Bishop of Chicago. Resolved, ninth, that the French Catholics of Chicago are determined to give all support to in their power to the Reverend Mr. Chinnicky in his struggle against the Bishop of Chicago. Resolved, tenth, that a printed copy of these resolutions be sent to every bishop and archbishop of the United States and Canada, that they may see the necessity of giving to the Church of Illinois a bishop more worthy of that high position. Resolved 11th, that a copy of these resolutions be sent to His Holiness Pius IX, that he may be incited to make inquiries about the humiliated positions of the Church in Illinois since the present bishop is among us. Resolved 12th, that the independent and liberty-loving press of the United States be requested to publish the above address and resolutions all over the country. Signed by P. F. Ropineau, President, and David Francier, Secretary. That cry of more than 2,000 Roman Catholics of Chicago, which was reproduced by almost the whole press of Illinois and the United States, fell as a thunderbolt upon the head of my Lord O'Regan and de Saulnier. Many bishops' letters were published denouncing me and my people as infamous schismatics whose pride and obstinacy were troubling the peace of the Church. But the most bitter of all was a letter from my Lord Bourchier, Bishop of Montreal, who thought the best and only way to force the people to desert me was by forever destroying my honor, but he had the misfortune to fall into the pit he had dug for me in 1851. The miserable girl who had made accusations against me then was dead, but he had still in hand the lying accusations obtained from her against me. Having probably destroyed her sworn recantation, written by the Jesuit Father Schneider, he was unaware of the three sworn copies of her recantation I had kept. He thought he could safely publish that I was a degraded man who had been driven from Canada by him after being convicted of some enormous crime and interdicted. This declaration was brought before the public for the first time by him with a hypocritical air of compassion and mercy for me, which added much to the deadly effect he expected to produce. Here in part are his own words addressed to the people of Bourbonnais and through them to the whole world. I must tell you that on the 27th of September 1851, I withdrew all my powers and interdicted him for reason which I gave him in my letter and addressed to him, a letter which he has probably kept. Let him publish that letter if he finds that I have persecuted him unjustly. I immediately replied to him by sending him through the press the recantation of the girl, accompanied by the letter he had written prior to my leaving Canada, which contained the following statements. Quote, I cannot but thank you for your labors among us, and I wish you in return the most abundant blessing from heaven. You shall ever be in my remembrance and in my heart, and I hope that divine providence will permit me at a future time to testify all the gratitude I owe you. I then reminded him of our parting conversation when I requested a tangible token of his esteem. You answered that you would be happy to give me one, and you said, what do you wish? I wish, I said, to have a chalice from your hands to offer the holy sacrifice of the Mass the rest of my life. You answered, I will do that with pleasure, and you gave an order to one of your priests to bring you a chalice that you might give it to me. But that priest had not the key of the box containing the sacred vases. That key was in the hands of another priest, who was absent for a few hours. I had not the time to wait. The hour of the departure of the trains had come. I told you, please, my lord, send that chalice to the Right Reverend Mr. Brissard at Longueuil, who will forward it to me in Chicago. And the next day one of your secretaries went to the Right Reverend Mr. Brissard gave him the chalice you had promised me, which is still in my hands. And the Right Reverend Mr. Broussard is there still living to be the witness of what I say, and to bring that fact to your memory if you have forgotten it. Well, my lord, I do not believe that a bishop will never give a chalice to a priest to say Mass when he knows that that priest is interdicted. And the best proof that you know very well that I was not interdicted by your rash and unjust sentence is that you gave me that chalice as a token of your esteem and of my honesty. 10,000 copies of this exposure of the depravity of the bishop were published in Montreal. I asked the whole people of Canada to go to the Right Reverend Mr. Schneider and to the Reverend Mr. Broussard to know the truth, and many went. The bishop remained confounded. It was proved that he had committed against me a most outrageous act of tyranny and perfidy, and that I was perfectly innocent and honest, and that he knew it. A few days after the publication of that letter in Canada, Mr. Broussard wrote me, "Your last letter has completely unmasked our poor bishop and revealed to the world his malice, injustice, and hypocrisy. He felt so confounded by it that he has been 3 days without being able to eat or drink anything, and 3 nights without sleeping. Everyone says that the chastisement you have given him is a terrible one, when it is in the face of the whole world, but he deserved it." When I received that last friendly letter from Mr. Broussard on the 1st of April, 1857, I was far from suspecting that on the 15th of the same month I should read in the press of Canada the following lines from him: "Saint Roch de la Ajrine, le 9th of April, 1857. Messieurs, I request you to insert the following lines in your journal, as some people suspect that I am favoring the schism of Mr. Chiniki. I think it was my duty to say that I have never encouraged him by my words or writings in that schism. I must say that last November, when I went to St. Anne, accompanied by Mr. de Saulnier, superior of St. Hyacinth College, my only object was to persuade that old friend to leave the bad ways in which he was walking, and in Chicago I pressed him to put himself in a canonical way. I more than anyone else deplore the fall of a man whom I confess I loved much, but for the sake of whom I will not sacrifice the sacred ties of Catholic unity. I hope that all the Canadians who were attached to Mr. Chiniki when he was united to the Church will withdraw from him in horror of his schism, for before anything else we must be truly and faithfully Catholic. However, we have a duty to perform towards the man who has fulfilled such a holy mission in our midst by establishing the Society of Temperance. It is to call back with our prayers that stray sheep who has left the true pastor's fold. I request all journals to reproduce this declaration. Truly yours, Moses Broussard, Pastor." I felt that there was not a line of sentiment of Mr. Broussard in that letter. I smelt Bishop Berger's hand from the beginning to the end. I thought, however, that it was my duty to address him. The letter I wrote is too lengthy to reproduce. In essence, it was an appeal to his conscience, integrity, and honesty as one friend to another. The effect of that letter upon Mr. Broussard was still more powerful than I had expected. It forced him to blush at his own cowardice and to ask my pardon for the unjust sentence he had passed upon me to obey the bishop. Here are parts of his letter to me. "Mon cher Chiniki, I am more than ever convinced that you have never been legally interdicted. Since Bishop Bourget told me that Bishop O'Regan had interdicted you privately in his private room, Ligori says that it is a nullity and that it can have no effect. I beg your pardon for what I wrote against you. I have been forced to do it because I had not yet sufficiently condemned you, and that my name, which you were citing in your writings, was giving you too much power and a too clear condemnation of Bishop O'Regan, the Bishop of Montreal, abusing his authority over me, forced me to sign that document against you. I would not do it today if it were to be done again. Keep silence on what I tell you in this letter. It is all confidential. You understand it. Your devoted friend, L.M. Brassard. No priest in Canada had more deserved the reputation of honor than Mr. Brassard. No one ever stood so high in my esteem. His sudden and unexpected fall filled my heart with an unspeakable sadness. It snapped the last thread which held me to the Church of Rome. Till then, it was my firm conviction that there were many honest, upright priests in that church, and Mr. Brassard was, to me, the very personification of honesty. How can I describe the shock I felt when I saw him there, in the mud, a monument of the unspeakable corruption of my church, the perfidious Delilah, and seduced and destroyed this modern Samson, enchained as a trembling slave at the feet of the new implacable Moloch. The authority of the bishop had not only lost the fear of God and the respect he owed to himself by publicly declaring that I was guilty when he knew that I was innocent, but he had so completely lost every sentiment of honesty that he wanted me to keep secret his declaration of my innocence at the very moment he was inviting my whole country through the press to abhor and condemn me as a criminal. I read again and again that strange letter. Every word of it was destroying the last illusions which had concealed from my mind the absolute and incurable perversity of the Church of Rome. I had no hard feelings against this last friend whom she had poisoned with the wine of her prostitutions. I felt only a profound compassion for him. I pitied and forgave him from the bottom of my heart, but every word of his letter sounded in my ears as the warning voice of the angels sent to save Lot from the doomed city of Sodom. Escape for thy life, look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. Genesis 19:17.